Warriors of Alpinador, the brave men and women of the many tribes that inhabited Mithranadun, lived up to their heroic heritage. With coordination and fury, their line drove deep into troll ranks. Whenever one group broke through and spearheaded out in front, those to either flank appropriately stretched behind them, so that instead of having any group get caught out alone and surrounded, the length of the barbarian line surged forward in a series of small wedge formations. One against one, there was no contest to be found. The larger, stronger, better-armed Alpinadorians stabbed ahead with impunity, skewering troll after troll. And yet, Tanake and the other leaders observed, their progress proved painfully slow. Waves of trolls came against them. Mobs of the monsters rushed in, leading with a barrage of flying spears that set the barbarians back on their heels and forced them to pause and cover with their wicker and leather shields. Tanake looked to the distant ice castle, their goal, and then to the west for the dipping sun. They would not get to the castle in daylight, he surmised to his dismay, and the night would not be kind. Tanake turned that way, and when he noted the fierce fighting there, he did not at first understand.
Another giant is down!
He swept his gaze out farther to the south, to the Powris, the fallen monk, the stranger, and Nilkela. The shaman's tight old face crinkled with confusion and consternation. Were these to be the saviors of Mithranadun? All he had for weapons were his hands and feet, and Branson really didn't see how either would do any damage to the giant battling the Powris before him. But he had to try. A dwarf rolled right around the behemoth's tree-like leg, ending with a solid two-handed wallop of his heavy club against the front of the giant's knee. Branson closed the last dozen running strides and leaped high. The giant lurched backward this time, distracted and overbalancing just as Branson crashed in and began launching a series of heavy punches. Over went the giant, crashing down to its back on the ice, and Branson hopped up to a crouch, sprang into a forward somersault, and double-stomped his heels into the giant's eyes. Powri swarmed over the supine giant, hacking with abandon. Branson looked at the small dragon swooping across the lines of cowering barbarians. He knew at once that it was ancient Baden. Leathery wings propelled the beast with great speed, its long hind legs and talon-tipped feet snapping down to keep the warriors ducking and diving aside. There was magic behind that powerful wail, for many men fell to their knees, grabbing at their ears. The dragon breathed forth a line of fire, immolating some and creating an obscuring fog. Spears reached up at it, but they seemed to bother the beast not at all, for they did not penetrate its armored body, or what seemed like a magical barrier encompassing that body.
We have to help them!
Branson grabbed Cormac by the shoulder, tugging him about.
The castle!
We have to help them!
We help them by taking the castle. It is the source, the conduit of Baden's power.
Cormac glanced back at the desperate fight to the north, but desperate acquiescence was in his eyes as he turned back to Branson.
Go on! Go on! To the castle doors, for all our sakes!
But few Powris heeded the call. Entranced by the allure of bright, giant blood, and with still more behemoths to be tripped up and slaughtered.
McQuiggick! To the castle!
McQuiggick put on a sour look, but he did stab out his arm to stop Pergwick from running by. Cormac nodded and started off, Milkela and Branson close behind. By the time they crossed the glacier to the ice ramp leading into the castle, McQuiggick and his three cohorts trailed in close pursuit. Branson ran right to the base of the ice ramp that led up through the carved tower-like guardhouses that flanked the opening to the castle's bailey. But there, right at the base of the ramp, he skidded to a stop, and he quickly put his arm out to block Cormac from running by him.
It is warded. How do you know?
Branson shook his head, but did not otherwise answer. He fell within himself, finding the line of his chi and willfully extending that life energy down to the ground beneath him. He felt the power there, clearly. and discordant with the teeming magic that had constructed and now maintained this castle.
He says that it is trapped.
Milkayla nodded her agreement almost immediately. Her magic was quite similar to that of the Samhastes, both drawing their energies from the power of the world beneath their feet. She stepped up tentatively, rattling her claw and tooth necklace. She nodded again and looked back to Cormac.
Our adversary has collected the muted countering energies to his construction together in this one place. It is a powerful ward.
Can you defeat it? Or can you bleed it?
Cormac looked at McWiggick curiously, and all the more curiously when he noted Milkayla nodding and smiling. The shaman tentatively walked up the ramp, rattling her necklace before her as if it served as a guard to the release of Samhaste magic. She neared the opening to the castle bailey.
Alturi met seces droma burdi bromos.
Immediately, the gleaming ice began to sweat and drip, and little flames seemed to dance within the ice itself. Branson felt it all profoundly. He understood Milkayla's counter. She was calling to the ward in measured volume, bringing it forth in bits and pieces to release the pressure. He nodded as he came to understand the trapped flames in the door jamb, designed to burst forth with tremendous energy if any crossed through without the appropriate magical commands. As his understanding of both the ward and Milkayla's apparent answer to it crystallized, Branson joined in the effort, channeling his chi to tease out pieces of the warding magic. Now the jam was sweating all about so profusely that a steady drip fell from the overhead ice beam like a moderate rain.
Yuck, but you did drop the whole thing!
Exactly what the trap was designed to do. But Milkayla and I have diffused it enough so that...
With a grin back at the dwarf, the highwayman darted ahead past Milkayla through the opening. Flames burst forth all around him, but nowhere near what it would have been initially.
The explosion would have taken down the front wall.
Milkayla led the others through the puddles and the portal to join Branson, and not a moment too soon, for they found their friend already engaged with another contingent of the stubborn and pesky trolls. The other trolls of the group fell back on their heels, confused and frightened, just as Branson's friends rushed past him, overwhelming the lot of the trolls. On an unlucky turn, a broken spear hooking at a bad angle caught Pergwick painfully in the hip. The dwarf shrugged off any attention, though, and matched the pace of the others as they charged across the courtyard to the castle's inner door. The door slid aside, and out jumped a man dressed in Samhaste robes and holding a short bronze sword. For a brief instant, Branson thought it to be ancient Bodden, and he instinctively pulled up.
Inferno!
That proved a fortunate delay, as the Samhaste sent a gout of flame out through his hand to engulf his sword blade and came forward with a series of mighty sweeps, extending those flames out before him. McQuickick ambled by Branson and nearly right into them before he finally stopped.
Yuck! The sword be aflame!
Branson leaped atop him, then sprang from the dwarf's sturdy frame, soaring high and far, lifting his chi as he went to carry him far above the expected mortal boundaries. Branson soared up and over. The surprised Samhaste turned his blade upward to try to intercept, but Branson was too high. He landed behind the Samhaste, then knifed his hand up behind the Samhaste's neck, catching a firm grip. Branson easily turned the man and tripped him up. They fell together, the Samhaste face down. Branson sprang up, running right over the man to grab the fallen sword. He was content to leave it at that, but of course the Powrys were not. They came in stabbing and slicing, pounding the poor fool back to the ice in short order so they could dip their berets in his spilling blood. Through the open door went Branson, Milkayla at his heels.
We need to find Barton's place of power. There must be one greater than all the others.
Before Branson could agree, Cormac rushed past.
Brother!
Both Branson and Milkayla turned his way. The pair then followed Cormac's gaze to the side where a group of miserable prisoners huddled, most prominent among them a man wearing Abelican robes.
John! Branson Garibond! Have you come to save us, friend?
Cormac had reached him by then, working the ropes to free the man and the others around him.
Not one will be able to aid us in this battle.
Well found, friend.
Branson couldn't suppress his horror at seeing the man's maimed face, scarred slits where his eyeballs once were. The blind monk fell over Branson, wrapping him in a hug.
No time. That beast is outside killing my people. I am certain that his power is concentrated in here through some conduit to the magical emanations beneath this glacier.
Whenever ancient Bardon appears to us, he comes down the ramp across the foyer.
Branson recognized the desperation in John's face, the need to help here, to try to repay Bardon for the injustice that had taken his sight.
Please, help me!
All turned to see the Samhaist Branson had clobbered, crawling on his elbows toward them, the four Powrys close behind.
Help me!
As he spoke, Biggle-Bryn came up beside him and took up a heavy club, lifting it for what was sure to be a killing blow.
Hold, hold! He can tell us!
The warriors of the tribes increased the number and ferocity of their attacks on the dragon. As one, they dismissed their fear and threw their spears or rushed to engage the beast whenever it swooped low enough for them to reach. They hardly cared for the trolls then, for next to this monster, those creatures seemed no more than a nuisance. But the dragon seemed unbothered by it all, seemed pleased by it all. Tanakay and the other shamans, throwing whatever offensive magics they could conjure at the beast, understood better than their noble and ferocious warriors. And in that understanding, they trembled with fear. For the dragon not only seemed impervious, but seemed to grow in size and in strength. No spear penetrated its scaled armor, and no warrior stood against it for more than a few heartbeats. Tearing claws, snapping maw, and clubbing tail drew a line across the Alpinadorian ranks, laying men and women low with impunity.
How do we even hurt it?
Hoping to answer just that, Tanake completed his spell, bringing forth a bird sculpture he had magically fashioned from the ice. He held it up before his lips and blew life into the small crystalline golem, then thrust out his arm, launching it away at the dragon. The gleaming ice bird flashed overhead, gaining tremendous speed before crashing hard into the dragon. If the great beast even noticed the animated missile, it did not show it, and the ice bird exploded into a million tiny and harmless droplets of water. They hustled up the ice ramp, Brother Jean leaning heavily on Branson and the four dwarves bringing up the back of the line carrying the captured and battered Samhaist by the wrists and ankles. The ascending corridor wrapped around to the right as it rose, crossing over one landing and then another, both circular and both centered by the same wide icy beam that seemed the main support for this part of the castle structure.
I'm not thinking he's long for living.
Don't you even be thinking of it!
Branson was amazed at the accuracy of the dwarf's guess, for he too could clearly see the silent debate between the two over whether or not they would use their healing magic to help the man.
We cannot just let a fellow human die!
Ruggers walked up beside McQuiggick, staring hard at the humans, then stomped on the back of the Samhaist's neck.
Your magic's for meself and me boys. And don't you even think you used it on one of them that were fighting when there's fighting before us?
Yeah, but it's not looking like he was hurt that bad after all. But you was right, McQuiggick. He weren't long for living.
McQuiggick waved his hand at the humans, bidding them to move along. At the top of the ramp, they came into another circular room and recognized that they were in the highest tower of the many turreted castle. Here, too, the support beam ended, but at floor level and not at the ceiling. For it was no support beam in the conventional sense at all. It was the base of a fountain, one that sprayed a fine and warm mist into this room. That mist contained power, Branson recognized immediately, and so did Milkayla. That mist was the stuff of Samhaist and Shaman Earth magic, the exact conduit Milkayla had sought. The water stream lifted about 6 feet into the air before collapsing back in on itself and splashing down into a two-tiered bowl. And though that base was also made of ice, it seemed impervious to the warm flow.
This is the source of his power. This is where ancient Bardon connects to his earthly power.
You can feel it.
I can as well. that is not so unlike the emanations of your gemstones, teems with energy, with Ki Chi Kree.
Branson closed his eyes and stepped up to the fountain, then washed his bare arm through it.
If that is Baden's source of power, can we too use it? Perhaps to counter the Ancient?
We cannot use it as he uses it. The powers he garners from it are beyond me.
This magic is not forced and stable as with the Abelican gemstones. It is fluid and ever-changing, and we cannot access it as Baden does. Certainly not in the time we have.
What then?
Despoil it.
I will weave spells into it to divert it from whatever course Baden has fashioned.
Milkela stepped up.
Burnim estur sword loak destros me verdum rotum.
Branson held his arm in the flow and sent his chi into it, trying to stagger the infusions and twist them in a wild attempt to somehow alter the magic within the water. And most straightforward of all came the Powrys, all four.
You heard him, boys! Put Bear the Dwarf in it!
They lined up around the bowl, unbuckled their heavy belts and dropped their breeches, and began their own special and to-the-point method of despoiling the magical water.
Oh!
Hope he's not drinking it.
Yeah, but I hope he is. Well, give him a taste of the power he's not to forget. What?
He soared over the line with impunity, roaring and breathing forth lines of fire, ignoring their feeble spears thrown by their weak mortal muscles. He was Baden, ancient of the Samhastes, the voice of the ancient gods who blessed him with the power of immortals, in this case, the strength of a true dragon. As he enjoyed this slaughter of unbelievers, he raked the line. A spear dug deep into his side. Those flames were not nearly as intense as the previous. Baden's serpentine neck swiveled to offer him a view of his distant castle. Something was wrong here. Something was interrupting the flow and strength of his magic. Another spear pierced him, shooting lines of hot pain. The dragon beat his long and leathery wings, propelling him across the barbarian ranks and beyond. There was little time for Cormac to do as the other six, in their own special ways, despoiling Baden's fountain conduit. Too late, he thought, to take the gemstone necklace from Milkela, for now he did not dare interrupt her concentrated efforts. Nor did he want the gemstones at that time, the former Abelican monk had to admit, to himself at least. The sense of betrayal was too raw and too sharp. His communion with the gemstones had always before elicited a feeling of kinship to Blessed Abel, the man who had founded the church less than a century before. But now, clearly, the representatives of that dead prophet considered Cormac's worldview as heretical. If he used the gemstones in this tremendous battle, would he feel the consternation of the spirit of Abel? He considered that perhaps he was making too much of it all, was allowing his anger and disappointment to overrule his judgment. He looked over at Milkela and could see the strain on her face from her continuing efforts. The magic she battled was tangible and formidable. Cormac steadied himself and took a step toward her, determined to dismiss his excuses and offer whatever help he could. But he stopped before he had really even started. For through the translucent wall above and behind Milkela came such a blossom of orange and yellow that Cormac instinctively pondered that he was seeing the birth of the colors themselves. He watched, mouth agape, unable to even call out a warning, as those colors, the fires of dragon breath, turned the icy wall to water and steam, and through the glowing cloud came the beast itself. The Powry scrambled to pull up their pants. Branson reacted with snake-like speed and precision, diving to the side and out of the way and collecting Milkela as he went, still deep in her trance. Cormac could only stand there and gape as the dragon's serpentine neck swept down and the beast rolled right over it, tucking its wings. As it came around, it was not the lower torso of a reptilian dragon that showed, but the legs of a man, feet adorned with painted toenails and vine-tied sandals. Baden continued his transformation as he completed the somersault, and it was a man and not a dragon that landed on the floor before the fountain. But not just any man. It was the Ancient of the Samhastes come calling.
Demax!
Magic reached out from Baden and into his magical ice floor. Huge ripples rolled out from the man. Waves of ice as if the floor had been caught somewhere between the state of a solid and of a liquid. Those ripples rose like waves and crested sharply and with tremendous energy, throwing dwarves and humans alike into the air violently. They crashed into the walls and bounced off the fountain, handheld weapons flying wildly. Milkayla landed in the fountain. She fared the best, however, for the only place in the room other than Baden's feet that was not violently rolling and crashing was within that very pool. The shaman grimaced as McGregor and Bicklebrin flew past her, grabbing at each other for support until they were split apart from each other by the intervening fountain tower. Cormac flew straight up into the air more than a dozen feet, and only his considerable training allowed him to sort himself out enough in his descent to prevent landing on his head. She winced at watching Branson, not flying about, but maneuvering over the solid waves as a boat might defy heavy surf. One wave broke right over poor Ruggers, smashing down on the dwarf with tremendous force. The ice wave blended right over him, burying him in the floor. Even the walls began to ripple and buckle. Now all of Milkayla's friends flopped and bounced about uncontrollably, except for buried Ruggers and one other. To the Gesta II, Branson's posture was known as the Donji Cree, the stance of the mountain, a place of complete balance and perfect calm, where the straight-standing mystic reached his line of life energy, his chi below his ki, his groin, and down to Dome, the floor beneath his feet. That line of life energy became the mystic's roots, his stability, and in such a state, a Gesta II could not be moved by a charging giant. The floor rolled to Baden's command beneath Branson's feet, but Branson moved with it, his legs bending and straightening accordingly, and so perfectly that his upper body remained perfectly still. He locked stares with Baden. Milkayla drew courage from that image and shook herself from her stupor. She reached into her magic again and thrust it into Baden's fountain, demanding that the violence end. She felt as if she was trying to hold back the great Myrionic Ocean itself, but she shook away her despair and pressed on, blocking out all the distractions, focusing solely on the task at hand. Ancient Baden broke off his stare and looked over his shoulder at the woman, feeling her intrusion into his magic as keenly as if she was reaching into his stomach and tugging at his entrails. The Samhain stabbed his hands out to the fountain's centering geyser. The roiling waters froze solid suddenly, encasing Milkayla's hands and forearms in a crushing grip. Baden whipped his arm in a sudden circle, and the icicle responded likewise, turning over itself as it rushed around, twisting Milkayla right over. She felt her shoulders pop from their sockets, then wrenching her back as the ice stopped its swing abruptly, locking her top half fast in place while her lower body whipped around. Baden felt his magic flow more fully once more, but he knew that the diversion of this foolish woman had cost him, for in the moment of calm the humans and dwarves had closed. The ancient snapped the fabulous sword off his back, took the hilt in both hands, and sent it out to arm's length. The man went up onto the ball of one foot, hooked that balance point into his magical energy and began to spin. His form blurred. He altered the angle of his blade so that there was no possible approach. Pergwick clutched at his head to hold his scalp in place. He went down to the floor, looking frantically for his lost beret. Branson slipped out of reach, but in a more controlled manner, taking a full measure of his adversary, and Bicklebrin dove over the side of the fountain, splashing down into the water. He had just regained his footing when Baden suddenly extended his reach, using the narrow sword as a focus for the release of his magical energy. The prone Pergwick skidded across the room. Cormac and McGuigick went flying away in a confused tumble, and Bicklebrin flew back into the center pole of the fountain with such force that his sensibilities kept right on flying. Dazed and hardly conscious as he hit the water once more, the dwarf flopped over the drowning Milkayla. On pure instinct, he hooked his arm under the woman's head and rolled himself onto his back atop her back, using her bulk to keep his own head above the water. He kept his arm hooked to hold himself steady, and that alone saved Milkayla, for the weight of the dwarf rolled him back, and his arm brought her head out of the water. Before he could congratulate himself, however, ancient Baden looked into the face of one who had not been moved by his magical thrust. Branson Garibond held his ground.
You have my sword.
It is you! I threw you from the glacier!
Highwayman Bounce.
You're a babbling fool! An idiot who could hardly stand!
Or I was a clever scout taking a measure of ancient Baden and his forces before bringing doom upon them.
Baden stood up straight and shook his head, or started to. For faster than a striking serpent, the highwayman struck. He sprang forward and snapped off a left and right jab for the old man's face. Then he rushed back in, slamming against Baden, one hand holding the man's sword arm, the other hand grasping the old man's face. And Baden responded by snapping his free arm up behind Branson. First, he crushed the man into him, and with strength beyond anything Branson believed possible. Baden grabbed the back of Branson's hair and bandana and tugged back violently. Branson raked his hand straight down, fingernails drawing lines of blood on Baden's face, then reversed and hit the old man with a series of short and devastating uppercuts. Baden reflexively let go of Branson's hair to bring his free hand in to stop the barrage, but the moment he did, Branson shot out to the side, going after Baden's sword arm, going after the sword furiously. But even though he got the leverage, the proper angle, he couldn't pry the weapon free. He realized his error right before Baden's fist smashed him in the back.
Fool!
Branson found his line of chi, found his center. He thought of Kaydale. He centered all of his fleeting thoughts on her, using her image as a focal point for holding on to his fast-flying consciousness. Something flew past him, and he was jerked backward. Another form rushed by. Branson managed to glance over his shoulder to see McQuiggick tight about Baden's leg, biting the man hard on the thigh, and to see Cormac facing Baden straight up, raining a rapid barrage of punches against the man's face. That one was no novice to fighting, but neither was he, were they, a match for ancient Baden. Branson guessed Baden's move, to pull free the sword and be done quickly with all three. So as soon as the ancient started, Branson reacted with sudden fury and all the power of his training behind him. He lunged for Baden's sword hand, grasping the wrist and cupping his other hand over the ancient's clenched fist, snapping with all his strength, with all of his leverage, with every ounce of Geste II and gemstone magic he could possibly muster. Ancient Baden's hand bent back over his wrist. Branson drove his own hand up over Baden's fist, catching the serpent hilt of his mother's sword and pulling it free. Cormac launched in a sudden sidelong somersault by a vicious backhand. Staring at Branson with hate-filled eyes, clutching his broken hand in close at his side, the ancient clawed his free hand down on the stubborn, gnawing powery, and with frightening strength plucked McQuiggick free. He lifted the dwarf to throw him at Branson, but the highwayman was already there, coming under the would-be sentient missile. He stabbed and quickly slashed upward, cutting under Baden's arm. The ancient still managed to throw McQuiggick, but suddenly he had so little strength behind it that the dwarf bounced and turned. Branson's sword slashed across Baden's belly, came around and poked him hard in the biceps, and as he lurched, his arm lowering, slashed him across the chin. Back went the ancient, who suddenly seemed little more than an old man, to fall into an awkward sitting position against the wall. And Branson was there, suddenly, sword edge against Baden's already bleeding neck.
You seem happy for a man about to die.
We all die, fool. You will not likely see near the years I have known.
Or the failure.
Ah, yes. The triumph of your Abilican church.
My church?
You have thrown in with them.
Do you think them any better? Oh, they find their shining moment now when their bubbles so impress the young and strong lairds. But where will they be when those lairds are old and lie dying? And those bubbles offer nothing. We Samhaists know the truth, the inevitability. There is no escape from the darkness. Their promises are hollow.
A truth you are about to realize intimately.
And as these Pelican fools rise ascendant, buoyed by their empty promises of forever, do you think they will be any better?
Do you think that I care?
Then why are you here?
Because they paid me, and because I hate everything for which you stand.
The six survivors and Brother Jean collected the rest of the prisoners and led them out of ancient Baden's ice castle. Outside, the battle had ended. With the dragon chased off, the troll lines broke. Now, both barbarian and dwarf lined the chasm, throwing stones and blocks of ice and spears down at the monster that prowled its depths. It seemed as if many were hitting the mark, for the great white worm would not flee into one of its burrows to escape the barrage. It would not back down from the threat, though it had no way of scaling the chasm wall to get at its attackers. Its mighty bulk and power could not protect it from its own lack of brains. McGuigic and Bicklebrin rushed off to join in the barrage. Even Pergwick, holding his cap against his head and his cap holding his scalp in place, followed.
You are from Vanguard?
The sightless Brother Jean turned to Cormac, who supported him as they moved across the ice.
Years ago, and Chapel Abel before that, I was a member of Father de Gilb's expedition.
I had thought the feel of your clothing to be that of an Abelican robe.
I am not Abelican anymore, brother.
Jean stopped and faced Cormac, though he could not see the man.
I was cast out. I questioned the limitations.
Limitations?
The Abelican Church's refusal to explore those traditions and magic outside the domain of the Church and the gemstones. There is more beauty to be found in this world, a wider truth than that which we have come to represent. The woman who accompanied us into the castle is a shaman of an Alpinadoran tribe.
I gathered as much.
I love her, and I see in her true and divine beauty. I see it in our other friend as well, this man named Branson.
Ah, the highwayman. Yes, he is a unique one.
And possessed of godly powers.
Brother Jean shook his head, unwilling to make that jump.
Powers akin to those of our gemstones.
I witnessed his healing hands, and his grace is rather amazing. But he is no man of God. Not yet. Though I suspect that his nature compels him to look that way. For all his life, our friend Branson cared only for Branson, and absent in him is a sense of community and greater good. No, not absent, simply not yet developed. I hold out great hopes for that one, if he doesn't get himself killed too soon.
As Jean put forth those observations, Cormac looked out at Branson, who was paralleling the Powrys toward the chasm. The monk's words, so very much like his own to Milkela regarding the highwayman, rang true indeed.
We will get you back to Chapel Pelennor and Dame Guidra.
Perhaps I might put in a good word for Brother Cormac?
Cormac winced at the title, both because he doubted a good word would do any good, and because he wasn't sure he wanted it back.
They ran, you know. Father de Gilb and the others of Chapel Isle, our chapel here in Alpinador, did not join in the greater cause with the Alpinadorans and the Powrys. Instead, they fled south, bound for Vanguard.
Brother Jean just shook his head, and Cormac realized that this wasn't the first time this man had been disappointed by the actions of fellow Abelicans. Cormac didn't press him on it, though. He hooked his arm under Jean's shoulder to support the man, and led him away.
You've been wanting this for a long time, mate.
Pergwick, a thick white bandage running about his head, chin to top and under his replaced beret, lowered his eyes and kicked a stone.
Rogerus was me brother. We slapped blood together that if either got killed to death, the other would watch over the sepulchre and care for the kid. It'll be me brother too, you know.
Aye, there's that. But I'm not waiting for the years you're to need. The lick's made me batsy already, I tell ya.
Not asking you to wait. And I'm thinking that yourself and Dick are to open things up for the rest. Criminig and the others said as much. They'll all go south when word comes back from McQuiggick that there's a place for us. I'm guessing that Morin ourselves have had too much of methranidine.
McQuiggick nodded and clapped Pergwick on the shoulder.
Good enough, then. And I'll be smiling when I see you again.
Pergwick grinned and began to nod, but McQuiggick cautioned him with an upraised hand.
Don't go shaking your head too rough.
Hey, we're not wanting your brains to go flying out. You're not for much to spare.
Picklebrin walked over carrying a large sack full of supplies.
What do you know?
Picklebrin motioned to the side where Cormac, Branson, Milkayla, and Brother Jean stood in a group, all carrying sacks.
Where did they get the goods?
The barbarians. They aren't too happy with the girl, but they know she just saved their homes.
Ah, an easier road for us all, then.
More food to start, at least. As for the rest, we'll be seeing.
They both patted Pergwick on the shoulder, then moved to join the others. The group of six was off the glacier that same night, moving determinedly south. The weather stayed warm over the next couple of days, and they encountered no trolls, and so they made great progress, despite the soreness from their fight with Baden and the more serious wounds which Milkayla's people had treated very well. Even Brother Jean, sightless though he was, walked with a spring in his step and took up hearty and spirited conversations with the two Powries.
You will return to your wife?
Milkayla spoke to Branson a couple of days out.
The moment I deliver this...
Branson jostled the small pack tied to the side of his pouch, one that contained the head of ancient Baden.
And she grants me the passage as promised.
You will sail far away?
As far as I can.
To where?
That question seemed to startle Branson.
Are you running to something or away from something?
The two are not mutually exclusive.
But the distinction is important.
Branson shrugged as if he didn't agree.
You are a man of marvelous skills. Important skills in this trying time.
All times are trying.
Then all times call for heroes, else all will be lost.
The way of the world is the way of the world, and beyond any one man.
That seems a pointless outlook.
It is one I have come by through bitter experience.
You have been given a great gift, and have never thought to turn it to the benefit of all.
Branson considered his time and pride holding, when he first earned the title of highwayman, when he spent his day stealing from the laird and distributing the booty to the unfortunate peasants, crushed under the weight of the laird's heel. He could not help but admit that even then, the good of the people was more a vehicle for his own ego than truly for the good of his people.
We just saved the people of Mithranadun.
And with positive ramifications that will spread throughout the whole of Vanguard, no doubt. You cannot deny that we did indeed just change the world for the better. The bloody head you hold in your belt pouch is no small matter. Perhaps it is the measure of the centuries, but it certainly is not a small matter to the people of this day and age and region.
Branson waved them away. His road was to his beloved Kaedale and to Callan. His responsibilities were to them and to himself. The idea that he owed anyone anything else seemed on its surface preposterous. How many people in the world had ever shown the young stork compassion and service? As the two walked off, Branson looked around at his fellow heroes and poor Brother Jean, the only other survivor of the band that journeyed north on the command of Dame Guidra. He thought of Crait and Olcona, and couldn't help but grin as he considered Crazy V. He tried to deny it, but could not. He had found a strange comfort and warmth in being a part of that lost group. As much as Branson told himself he was only along on the mission for the sake of Kaedale and his family, in the end, he had gone down to do battle with Baden. And in the process, he had formed a new bond with this competent group. He couldn't deny the warmth. He felt he belonged.
The Saga of the First King, Book 2, The Ancient, is a graphic audio production. Copyright 2008 by R.A. Salvatore. Published by arrangement with St. Martin's Press Macmillan. All rights reserved. Production copyright 2012 by The Cutting Corporation, Incorporated. All rights reserved. With performances by Bradley Smith, Alyssa Wilmoth, Kimberly Gilbert, Yasmin Twazon, Dan Sontag, James Lewis, Richard Rowan, Terrence Aselford, Colleen Delaney, Nanette Savard, Joe Brack, David Coyne, MJ Casey, Ren Casey, Mort Shelby, Patrick Bussink, Stephen Carpenter, Michael Glenn, Christopher Graybill, Ken Jackson, James Keegan, Drew Copus, Thomas Keegan, Scott McCormick, Eric Messner, Thomas Penny, Christopher Sheeran, and Johann Detweiler. Adapted and directed by Johann Detweiler. Produced by Richard Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Dialogue editing and graphic audio sound design by Johann Detweiler. Featuring original music composed and performed by Dan Smith and Johann Detweiler. If you enjoyed The Saga of the First King, be sure to look for R.A. Salvatore's Demon Wars Saga, John Sprunk's Shadow Saga, and Brent Week's The Lightbringer Trilogy. All available in graphic audio at Road Stops Everywhere, at 1-800-670-5220, or at www.graphicaudio.net, where you'll find samples of all our Action Pump titles, as well as free downloads and podcasts. Now keep listening for exciting previews of other titles in graphic audio.
I give a damn that you're my father.
The thought never crossed my mind.
I don't know you, and I don't want to know you. All you ever gave me was a rep to live up to. I done it too. Maybe I haven't killed as many men as the famous Frank Morgan, but my day's coming, old man. My day's coming.
Can Frank Morgan gun down his own flesh and blood? Find out in The Last Gunfighter number 23. Montana Gundown. Available now in graphic audio. When Smoke Jensen's wife is shot, he will carve a bloody path through all of Colorado, leading straight to the heart of the villain. If you think you know violence, you ain't seen nothing yet. Don't miss The Visceral Revenge in The Mountain Man number 39, Assault of the Mountain Man. Available now in graphic audio. The warded man stalks the night, slaying demons with the newly discovered wards of power. But now, a new threat is rising. An old friend, now a bitter enemy. And he has in his possession a weapon that could unite all humanity, or tear it to pieces. The Desert Spear. Witness the rise of Amon Jardir in The Demon Cycle, Book 2, The Desert Spear. Available now in graphic audio.
Now we can invade the Greenlands.
If you can't find that graphic audio title you're looking for, go to www.graphicaudio.net where you can order it in CD format or digital download. If you're on the road, call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220. Or www.graphicaudio.net. And if you're looking for a great way to try out a different graphic audio series, check out our convenient and easy-to-store long-haul box sets, which contain up to 5 books of a series. Available only at www.graphicaudio.net. Be sure to sign up for our monthly newsletter or follow us on Twitter.